ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
And just a warning, we will be discussing suicide during this interview. In the coming hours, the Chief of the Defence Forces, General Angus Campbell, will address the Royal Commission into Defence and Veterans Suicide. It will be the final public hearing for the Commission, which was formed in 2021 to investigate the causes and the consequences of the suicide crisis within the defence community. John Lane is Chair of the Military Veterans and Emergency Services Personnel Mental Health Network at the Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Psychiatrists. John Lane, welcome.
Morning, Patricia. Thank you very much for having me on.
You're a veteran yourself. What has been your reaction to some of the testimony given to this Royal Commission?
So this whole commission has been long overdue, and to be frank, it's been fairly arduous for a lot of people hearing the stories, I suppose, from the individual veterans, you know, what they've experienced with defence and with DVA over the years. And in many, many ways, you know, a part of the process of this has actually been restoration, having people be able to tell their stories, feel like they've been heard, and then feel like something has been done about it. And I think Karen Bird, who spoke on Tuesday morning, is probably one of the best examples of that. Her son committed suicide, and her fight for justice, for lack of a better word, it's really, really difficult hearing. But this is what people actually experience, what they live through. And so in many ways, you know, it's really restorative to have that sort of audience, that recognition, and then know that something's going to happen as a result.
Obviously, this didn't just happen, this Royal Commission. It was campaigned for and very vigorously by the veterans community for this to happen. How prevalent are mental health issues among the population at the moment?
I think mental health issues are quite significant. And you know, thinking about the population of personnel that are being discharged for medical reasons or involuntary reasons from defence, you'd have to say roughly sort of 40% of those people have some form of mental health disorder. But when you look at suicide, which is what the commission is also, you know, primarily looking at, the rates are actually significantly higher. And so for those veterans who've been involuntarily discharged, the rates are something like 1.6 times higher than their civilian counterparts. And unfortunately for women, they're significantly higher again too. So it's a really unfortunate set of circumstances.
There has been progress in developing solutions to the issue. You've worked on the Military and Veteran Psychiatry Training Program, which develops veteran cultural competency among psychiatrists. What does that training mean?
So one of those things that I think people don't really think about or necessarily understand is that military service in defence is quite culturally unique. And so for me, for example, I enlisted in the reserves when I was 17, a long time ago, and then in the regular army in 1990. And, you know, I say to people that I grew up in the military, grew up in the army, and defence service conditions you to adopt a particular sort of identity and then to behave in particular sorts of ways as well too. And then there's the experiences that you have in defence, you know. And so culture impacts what we see in terms of mental health conditions. And we know this is true for every other proportion of the community, but we don't often think about it in terms of service personnel. And this Military Veterans Psychiatry Training Program is about funding hospitals, basically, and places that specifically treat veterans, like the Austin Repat Centre or the Concord Hospital in Sydney. It gives trainee psychiatrists 6 months exposure to veterans and their mental health needs. And this is really, really important, because if we don't have these sorts of training positions, then we don't get clinicians exposed to veteran personnel and their specific and unique needs. And so for myself, for example, during my training, I had no ability to go to any particular training position to develop more expertise in that. It was only because of my own lived experience and my own service experience that I could actually do those sorts of things. And this is one of those things that we have to sort of think about going forward. And, you know, to my understanding, this position is in the budget submission for May, and we're very much hoping that this will continue. But it's even things like having, you know, veterans' mental health issues taught in medical schools. And I teach at the University of Tasmania, and I introduce these sorts of things when I'm talking about PTSD and trauma, because it's different in defence services personnel and in emergency services personnel as well too.
We've heard in recent months about retention and recruitment for the ADF. Do you believe that issue around support for mental health is having an impact? Is it linked to the retention issues?
I'm not entirely sure about that. And I mean, we have a huge workforce shortage in psychiatry and in mental health personnel in general. But Defence has 4 full-time uniformed psychiatrists, and the first uniformed psychiatrist for Army was employed in 2019, for example, and that's Lieutenant Colonel Diana Mackay. So we have some personnel in Defence working in full-time roles. And as a reservist myself, we actually have quite a number of psychiatrists working in reserve roles. And when we think about, you know, the new Defence mental health and wellbeing policy and those sorts of things, I'm not sure that Defence is engaging its psychiatric workforce to the best extent that it could to resolve a lot of these particular problems.
Do you hold much hope that this Royal Commission that's run for 3 years will lead to substantial changes?
Absolutely, I do. The commissioners have done an enormous body of work. I've been heavily involved from the start of this in terms of, you know, even the terms of reference for the commission. And it's absolutely mind-blowing the amount of work that they've done. And the chair, Commissioner Nick Caldas, and his colleagues have done some really insightful and really quite direct work. And you can see this in the interim report that was released in September last year. But I think a lot of veterans are really happy and really pleased about the outcomes and about, you know, the way both organisations have had to account for themselves and what they've been done. And I know it's had a massive impact in the way DVA does business as well too, and some significant impacts in the way Defence does business as well too. And I think what we're all looking forward to when the report's handed down later this year is what happens next. Because I think one of the biggest potential tragedies is that this is a commission, it moves on, and then we go back to the status quo. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the worry, of course, with a lot of these things. I feel like in the public there has been an erosion of trust after royal commissions, you know, sit and get dusty and are referred to for many years after without the adequate response. Is that a real fear here?
I don't think it's a real fear, because I think the you know, commission has developed significant momentum in terms of its impacts already. So a lot of those things have already been done. So I don't quite have that same degree of fear. But I do think that it's something that we need to be really mindful of, because for a lot of people, Defence Service gives them a huge amount of benefits, you know, strengths, skills, training, education, leads them on to better jobs, all of those sorts of things. You know, and I'm a classic example again. I had 10 years as a soldier, then did medicine as a sponsored undergrad, and then after I'd finished my return of service, then I did my psychiatry training. And, you know, I grew up in the Army, is what I sort of say, as I said, and I wouldn't be who I am without those formative experiences, you know, comradeship, mateship, working hard, you know, those values of integrity and commitment, those sorts of things. And this is why people still want to be in Defence. But I think we have to remember that any organisation, any institution where there's a strict hierarchy, there can be abuses of power, and there can be people that just, you know, they don't do well. And we owe them. We have to be able to look after everyone. And that's part of the core, you know, ethos of and values of Defence Service, looking after your mates. And every year we talk about this on Anzac Day and Remembrance Day and these sorts of things, but those invisible wounds and injuries of people that suffer from their Defence Service that we have to respect, and we have to continue to make sure that we prioritise them.
Thanks so much for your time, John.
Absolute pleasure.
John Lane of the Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Psychiatrists. If you've been affected by the issues that we've been discussing here, there's a few places you can turn. The Defence All Hours Support Line is a confidential telephone and online service for ADF members and their families. The number is 1-800-628-036. And Open Arms provides 24-hour free and confidential counselling and support for current and former ADF members and their families. The number 1-800-011-046. You're listening to RM Breakfast.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.